Hi, and welcome to Tea and Toast Talking Birth. My name's Helen Jakes, and I'm this week's host. I'm a qualified nurse and midwife, and more recently, I've moved into midwifery academia. The co-hosts that will be joining me every week are Julie Flint.
Hi, I'm Julie Flint. I've been a midwife for 30 years now, and an academic for 15 of those.
Frances Hodgson.
Hi, I'm Frances. I'm a midwife, also a midwifery lecturer.
And Ola.
Hello, I'm Ola Wahey. I've been a midwife for 22 years. I've been working in academia for the past 15.
This podcast aims to discuss and muse a different birth topic every week with our hosts, who collectively have over 80 years midwifery experience. And some weeks we will be inviting special guests to contribute towards this conversation. We do not intend any of our discussions to act as medical advice, and all of the considerations are merely our own thoughts and feelings on that particular subject, utilising our collective experience and knowledge. Our aim is to bring together the wider community of birth, combining the clinical experience with the felt experience, in a hope to demystify pregnancy and birth and share information. So, on to today's conversation. This week's conversation is all about birth experience. Every person who gives birth have their own unique experience, which is influenced by so many variables. It's an area of birth that, regardless of what clinical interventions happen, the experience will occur. The World Health Organization in 2008, on its guideline on intrapartum care, recognised positive birth experience, stating, "The growing knowledge on how to initiate, accelerate, terminate, regulate, or monitor the physiological process of labour and childbirth has led to an increasing medicalisation of the process. It's now being understood that this approach may undermine a woman's own capability in giving birth and could negatively impact her experience of what should normally be a positive life-changing experience." So with this in mind, we hope to explore birth experience and what factors make up a positive birth, and how as midwives and students we can influence the experience of women and family, particularly when the birth becomes more interventionless. So we're going to ask a few questions, and the first question is going to be to Julie. So Julie, what do you think makes a woman's birth experience positive?
Well, I think a positive birth experience is key to ensuring that a woman feels ready to look after that baby that she's giving birth to. And I think the biggest part of that is the word control.
Yeah.
The word control has been out there in our world of midwifery since 1992, when the changing childbirth document first proposed that women should have control. But for me, it's whether they are using medical support, such as an epidural or medical interventions, or using self-hypnosis to relax and to zone out. Either way, it's about the woman having the control. And that means her having the understanding of what's going on and having choice within that. I think if she has those choices, has that understanding, she will ultimately feel in control. A really good friend of mine, I remember when she was having her babies, she said to me as she was pregnant, aside from us being midwives, she said, "Julie, I want an epidural. I know I do. I know that that will help me stay in control." And it absolutely did. It worked for her. But she had the knowledge and understanding so that she didn't feel so anxious that she needed to get that epidural in too early. So therefore her birth then proceeded quite well, because it had been done in a manner where she had full understanding of what was going on in her labour, and therefore she used that intervention to her abilities and to her own means. So that's what I think it means. But women having control is quite a difficult one. So many women I've heard over the years, either through the birth preparation classes that I've done with women, or in clinical care, or also from students relaying back to us in class when we're telling each other about the experiences, it's the word allowed. So many women say the words, am I allowed to, da 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 da. And that, I think, is what reflects that control. They are asking for control. They want to be allowed to do what they want. But they're equally asking us, as professionals, about opinions, about support within that, and wanting us to guide them. So I think so much is in that relationship between women and midwives to try to make sure that it's built on the knowledge of both people. When I did some research on our local doula organisation, which was superb, the overriding line that the women said about having a doula was that they have someone on their side. And I think that speaks volumes, that women want somebody on their side. They want that relationship. My feeling is that midwives have that same relationship too and are absolutely able to do that. So there is a lot of research that absolutely supports the fact that women can have positive births and the immense effect that it can have. Some midwives from Bradford, Hill and Firth, recently did a systematic review and showed and expressed how the self-esteem and confidence as a new parent was much higher by the influence of the providers and the birthing culture and knowledge of the person who's going into labour herself. So I think there's a lot of truth out there that's demonstrated by research as well. Again, another one, Annika Karlstrom, I've probably not pronounced her name correctly, back in 15, she did some research that also reflected that women reflect on birth and that it was partly down to their own ability, which was their internal strength and ability to achieve that positive birth, but also the external influences of having a trusting, respectful relationship with a midwife. So there's lots of work we've all done, we've all read and we've all seen with women around that relationship. Of course, our own Mavis Kirkham's done a lot about midwife-woman relationships over the years that we've all read about, and there's lots of popular books out there for women to read that are written by activists and feminists. But also we've got to try to avoid developing a bit of a them and us culture. Mm-hmm. Like I say, there's lots of people involved in birth, there's doulas, there's doctors, there's people that are trying to be activists as well. And what we absolutely want to do is all be on the same page, I think, for women. And as you've already said, globally, the World Health Organization have recognised that a positive birth experience is good to have, but they've equally seen through research globally that women may not always get that positive birth experience. So they've even changed the wording. They had a normal birth, a care for normal birth before, but now it's care for a positive birth that they've changed it to. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a big agenda out there. There's lots of women discussing it, lots of midwives discussing it, and I know with students we all discuss it in most of our sessions that we do with, I think, with them. What do you think?
It's really interesting that you say that the positive outcomes for having a positive birth experience then have positive outcomes in the aftercare and the postpartum and throughout the whole of that caring for that child and that baby, and also with the family. What I worry about, or what I struggle with, is that shift of balance of power in the labour room and how we can adjust that, because women are feeling like they have no power to say. They want things that am I allowed? And really, why is that still happening when midwives are trying to have that relationship? What's happening to make them still feel like they've not got the power of their own birth?
I think culturally, medicalisation of birth has certainly increased. The advancing of a risk agenda has made a difference. I think women out there, as well as midwives, feel a great deal of fear for birth nowadays. And I think that influences how care is implemented,
yeah.
particularly in a medicalised environment. I think midwives feel different when they're looking after women and assisting at birth when they're in a hospital setting to what community midwives feel when they are in somebody's home assisting with birth when they are the guest.
That's exactly what I was just about to say, I think, is that it's really interesting when you go to home births, the way the dynamic changes. And I think that is where this ties in with that how women feel about the control and who has the control. And we like to think that it's non-hierarchical. We like to talk. We talk about the women at the centre of care as they absolutely should be. But still, there are our hospitals and our trusts and all our infrastructure has guidelines and it has policies and it has boundaries and it has the way we normally do things, which is kind of imposed upon the women and the midwives and the obstetricians in the system we work with. And if you go outside of that and into a different environment, the whole of the dynamic is completely different. And like you say, you're the guest in the woman's home. Mm-hmm. She is the one offering you a drink instead of you offering her a drink. And she knows where things are and she's explaining to you where the things are. So it's a really good example of what it looks like when women are in control.
It's absolutely. But what I question is the fact that the midwife is still governed by the same guidelines, the same principles, the same structures that are in place in the home as she is in the hospital. So why is it changing in the hospital?
I think there's that cultural element where there's a lot more influence just outside the door for the midwife working in a hospital setting. She may walk away from the woman to give her some space, some quietness, some zoning out, but she's instantly influenced by what's going on outside. And the cultural impression of birth that other midwives have outside. So community midwives in a home birth setting don't have that. They will just be zoning with the woman. They will be together in that in that setting.
Absolutely.
So we know they're influenced by any other practitioners.
What I would say is in a hospital environment, there's much more of a surveillance culture. Everybody's watching and everybody's conscious of being watched by somebody.
Mm.
And there's a hierarchy that's much clearer. Even if it's invisible, people know who they're answerable to. At home birth, the midwife is acting in a much more autonomous capacity and she's making the decisions without having people watching her. So she's maybe more comfortable and confident to respond to the woman's needs than if she has somebody breathing down her neck and telling her about time deadlines and what she should be doing next and hasn't she done this yet? And I think that's part of it, watching the clock.
That's right. At home, it's clearer that it's that relationship between just those few people and not influenced by how busy it is on the other side of that door.
Mm. It's a difficult field for us to navigate.
Mm.
And so as sort of academics teaching students, it's very conflicting. And I know we're going to press on to some more questions, but how can we navigate that within the student environment to support students? I think that's one of the questions to you, Frances, is how much do you think the midwife and student impacts on that experience?
Yeah, I think it's undeniable that the midwife is and students are going to have an impact on the woman's birth experience. I don't think that anyone would claim that that's not the case. And we've got a lot of quite interesting research going back to like the early 2000s, and I'm thinking of Ellen Hodnett's work particularly here and about support in labour was what she was looking at. But the interesting thing that came out of that is that it's not necessarily midwives, and that's where it ties in with what you were saying, Julie, about the doulas and the role that a doula has to play. So in the Cochrane Review in 2002 that Ellen Hodnett did, it said that there was definite benefits to be shown for mothers emotionally and in terms of the progress of their labour and the outcomes if they had continuous support with them. But nobody really understood exactly what that meant by continuous support and who was the best place to do that. And in the latest version of that, they've looked at it more specifically or through the years. What they've said is that ideally that support will be provided by someone who is not an immediate part of the woman's own network, so not necessarily a friend or a family member, but also someone with some experience in providing labour support, so that would fit in with the role of the midwife, and has a some degree of training, so for example a midwife or a doula. But it also says that one of the things is that that person should be there just to provide support for that woman. And I think this is where the interesting thing comes in with the midwives, is because we're not there just to provide support for women. We'd love to be, but we're not, because we're also there to do all the other side of it, and the clinical side of the birth and the documentation and all the other things that are going along in the background as well, which can sometimes take us away from the women. Mm. And that's where I think, actually, the role of the student can be tremendously beneficial for the women. Because if you've got the student there as well, they don't necessarily have... They need to learn the other things. They learn the clinical side of it and the documentation side of it. But simply by the fact that you've got two people looking after that woman, whereas normally you would have one, there's a little bit more time and a little bit more space for people to offer that support. So, and I think for the students, it's an amazing learning experience as well, because that's where you really start getting your teeth into the proper midwifery, isn't it, when you're sitting there and giving that support. Other than that, there is some very good evidence to say that if a woman has a negative experience of either her midwife or a student midwife, that can negatively impact on her birth experience. And I know we don't like to think that we can actively do harm as midwives, but emotionally speaking, it is true, and that it's one of the biggest factors that they found in women talking about a negative birth experience was about perceived negative attitudes from the people caring for her at the time. Mm-hmm. And that is something I think we have to be very mindful of. And then another interesting thing I thought, though, was I found a piece of research by Hildingsson, who is a Swedish academic working in the field of midwifery, and what they were looking at in their study was about birth experience for fathers. And what that found was actually the strongest indicator of a positive birth experience from the father was the presence of a midwife, and a presence of a midwife the father found supportive. So, and again, I think sometimes we forget that a little bit in when we're talking about birth experiences, that it isn't just the birth experience of one person, it's the birth experience of everybody who's in that room with that woman giving birth. And it was really interesting that actually it seems almost a stronger link with the father's experience or the birth partner's experience than with the woman's in some ways.
As in the relationship with the midwife and the father.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So what it said was the father valued the midwives for the support and the trust that they were giving them, but also for the support and the trust that they were giving the woman as well, because they obviously felt like it was helping the woman, and that was helping them to help the women, to help them cope with the overwhelming emotions that they had going on at the time.
It's really interesting, but it seems such a shame that we can utilise the student and they can have that really lovely experience with the women and being with women as a supportive mechanism while they're in that student role. But it sounds very much like as they become qualified, they have to take one step away from that.
Yeah, I find it quite interesting because some mentors have said to us at different times that are looking after students whilst looking after women, oh, I really enjoy having a student because they are able to read the evidence base and be really up to date, so I can learn from students.
Yeah.
Plus the students, by being in the university, by the critical thinking that they're doing, are encouraged to think differently, and therefore they will challenge the culture. So some of the cultural issues that we were talking about earlier and through this, they are able to think differently and see differently because they're outside it. They're not as embedded as a midwife all the time. So they can see, and they come back into class, don't they, and they reflect some stories of situations where they feel as though they've made a real difference because of what they've learned in the theoretical side and education and being able to make an impact to change that culture.
I absolutely agree, but what I think, in sort of playing a bit like devil's advocate, once they come out of that student uniform, are they then going to be take on that midwifery role and they don't have that time or that scope, actually, to...
Perhaps that comes back to that other side of the labour ward door and the culture that's going on outside on that ward. You know, do they then become socialised? Do they want to be seen to be part of the team?
Yes.
So therefore we'll do what the team says and run the line that seems the average line.
Yeah.
I can remember being quite newly qualified and working in a labour ward context and feeling like, this is it, I've got my wings, I can practice midwifery, I can do what I've been frustrated about and wanted to do for a long time. But then having that conflict of thinking, oh, but I need to do it this way because this is what is being modelled to me in my clinical area. And having to attend a study day, I attended a study day by Andrea Robertson on active birth, and that gave me the tools again to think, right, I am going to, this is how the labour room is going to be when I'm in it. We're going to move the bed out of the way.
So
continuous professional
development, is something that us midwives have to do all the time.
Mm.
Sort of reignited that spark and gave
obviously,
you that.
Obviously, it relates to, you've got to take each woman on an individual basis, but when a woman was healthy and labour was physiological, or was as far as possible to make those things, put your birthing ball in place, to not make it unnecessarily medicalised, you know, intervention as needed, but not assumption, not as an assumption, and also changing your priorities. What's the what is the priority? Is it your paperwork, or is it, you know, rubbing woman's back, and being creative, putting a woman in the bath, which was one something that, you know, you learn that from older generations of midwives, and just looking at different tricks that you could do.
And I think that goes back to kind of what you were saying, Julie, about somewhere along the line that cultural midwifery has slipped away.
There's an interesting thing happening in midwifery that I think might alter the dynamics of this a little bit, perhaps, and that is looking at the movement towards continuity of caring.
Mm.
Because one of the things that the research around continuity of care suggests is that women who know their midwife have a better birth experience.
Mm.
And that almost seems intuitive, really. You would imagine, because they might be more relaxed and feel more supported and all those kinds of things. But I think there's something else to it as well, which ties in with what you were saying, Ola, about whether you're going to be the midwife who speaks up, whether you're going to be the midwife who properly advocates for your woman, going, no, this is what we're going to do, or if you just kind of slide along with that labour ward culture and push your women very, very gently, just little nudges in that direction to say, this is what we're doing. And I think as a midwife, I feel like there's a difference. If you know that woman, if you know her history and her family and her story and what she wants before she walks into that room, so you've already got that relationship, I think you're much more likely to positively advocate for her because it's important to you.
And you understand.
Absolutely.
It doesn't feel like guesswork.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But also because at a basic level, you feel like you're leaving yourself open to something sometimes if you support the women 100% in what they want to do if it's not what is normally done.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard thing for anyone to do.
Yes.
And I think you're more likely to do a hard thing if you've got a very good reason to do it. And if you know your woman and you know you're going to see her again and you have that relationship, it's more of a push in
and
that direction.
And actually, if you don't know your women and you're going into the labour room and you don't understand their needs, you don't actually understand how they react to you, you've got to get to know them very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you might not be supporting them in the way that they require that support, whereas if you know them a little bit more, you will give them extra support.
One of the things that helps with that is birth plans, birth planning.
Absolutely.
I've been in this job long enough. Birth plans were first introduced. And I was really excited by women taking control, women writing down what they wanted, you know, what they had as their control. However, I read a birth plan, and every time I would read it, for example, she'd say things like, I want to walk about in labour. Hmm, so do I. I want you to. I do not want an episiotomy. I don't really want to do one of those either. And it was, yes, I completely agree with that birth plan. However, coming back to culture, it was really interesting how the culture on a labour ward embraced birth planning, which I did see some negativity.
Absolutely.
And I remember becoming the midwife that if a woman came in with a birth plan, oh, give her to Julie. Well, she'll do all of those sorts of things. She'll have the lights
it's
down.
It's exactly Adam Kay in his book. I can't remember.
This is going to her.
Emily Hill speaks of it in her book, Good Birth Like a Feminist, where he puts commentations on the woman that turns up with the birth plan
the as being a hippie
and having expectations beyond what she should. It's really, really sad.
But I saw it as an absolute connecting thing that I thought, oh, birth plan, she wants to be in control. Yes. Great. Yeah. Let me be on the same plan with you to do it.
I think it goes back to that them and us culture that you were saying that ought to be avoided. We need to be working together, because a birth plan was something that divided staff. So there would be the supportive ones, people who are excited rubbing their hands together, and then, there were the ones, oh, that'll be out of the window in 10 minutes, you know, the cynicism, because it's like, I know best, don't think you can tell me how to, I've been a midwife for however long, and I know that you're not going to be able to cope with this. And it was almost like a battle of the wills
as to
who's going to win.
Then, interestingly, then that's where the sort of midwifery abdication comes in that Jameen speaks about, where it's about sort of where the midwives are promoting normality against any sort of medicalisation, because they want to get that positive outcome for that woman. Mm. So that then comes back to the battle of consciousness about being the midwife that's supporting the woman, but it should never compromise the safety of that woman, the safety of the woman and the baby as well. Mm. It's a hard battlefield to navigate.
I do think that as well, as a midwife, I just find birth plans are so immensely useful, because if you're not working in a continuity model and you haven't met that woman before, it's really helpful to have an idea. Mm. Because the core point to this really is that every woman's, what she needs for that control is going to be different for every woman. And so you won't know that until you have a chance to sit down and chat. And sometimes you do have a chance to sit down and chat. And sometimes she comes in and she doesn't feel like chatting and she's maybe too advanced in labour. It can be really useful to have a rough idea of which kind of direction she was intending for this labour to go in from the beginning. And it doesn't mean she has to stick to that by any stretch of the imagination. But it's just nice to have that jumping off point for those conversations.
Yeah, the starting point.
Definitely.
So, sort of going back to what you were saying, Frances, about the supporting role of the midwife and the doula, and moving on to the question to Ola, which is, I know you briefly spoke about the partner and within the birth influence, birth experience, and I wanted to ask you, Ola, so what do you think women and families can do to influence the birth experience?
Well, I looked at the question and I just thought...
She did some homework.
I did some homework. I've skimmed a lot of things. And it was... I was just thinking, that's such a huge question, women and families. And I was just... I've been mulling it over inside and thinking, the woman herself, what can she do to influence it? And I just think, maybe sometimes when we're talking about it, we miss that the woman is, you know, she could be the driving force behind it. And we're always concerned about who the other actors are in the situation, partners, midwives, doulas, obstetricians, students, GP, everybody else but the woman. And I think women maybe feel a bit like that. So I was just thinking about, so that would be about, is the woman an active player in her own birth experience, or is she passive and just a recipient of care or instructions? So very much I was thinking it's the woman's own attitudes to life, I think, quite apart from how she feels about pregnancy, motherhood, childbirth, is going to have an influence on how it plays out with her, and what are her beliefs, what is her preparedness. So do we have the women who go to the birth classes that you used to run, Julie, or who go to the NCT birth classes, which would be met with cynicism with the NCT birth plans, which I've experienced by some members of staff, but others embraced. What kind of person is it that has come into that birthing experience? And so her values, her beliefs, her preparedness is going to make a difference. It's not going to make all the difference, but it's going to give you a starting point. Some women come into labour quite blank and they're almost willing to just tell me what to do. They're an absorbent sponge. And sometimes it can be a pleasure to look after those women, because you can just facilitate their physiology, because they don't have any strong expectations one way or another. And depending on the kind of midwife you are, that might depend on how that birth experience goes, because but then there are some women who have very well-formed ideas of how they want their birth experience to go. And I was thinking about other things, so the family. So I was thinking about women, how do their families influence them? I'm thinking, before they've even become pregnant, they're part of a family. They've been born and brought up, they're in a family. And they've got values, they've got beliefs, they've heard stories about childbirth, they've watched their mums, their aunties, and people who are close to them go through birth experiences and give them snippets of information. It can be a bit secluded and a bit mysterious because we've moved births into hospital, we've taken it out of the home to a large extent after the Peel Report in 1970, which we all remember. Well, we know of, not we don't. But that was, you know, the idea was to have 100% of hospitalisation of births, which has taken childbirth out of the context of the home and the community, because even when I was a student midwife, we still had things like GP units, which were still located in the community. They were local and people went there because it was comfortable and they'd have their Domino's deliveries and so forth. And so what understanding do they have? And then what are they exposed to about childbirth? So we often think about the media. But then the media is sprawling now. Is it the books? Have they done their homework and got their preparation for childbirth books and the childbirth experts? Are they those kind of women, or are they women who have accessed the media? What have they seen on TV? What have they heard on the radio through podcasts? The media is sprawling now. Yeah. They have apps that can come straight to their phone that can tell them everything they need to know, or so they think. What have they been exposed to? And then I was thinking about what the hierarchy is in the birthing position, or what the woman feels the hierarchy is. So if a woman comes into a labour situation, whether she's at home or in an alongside birthing centre or a standalone birthing centre or in a hospital, an obstetric unit, does that woman feel as if she has to defer to the midwife or the obstetrician or her husband? Partner, you know, because sometimes you can get birth partners who are very much coaching the woman, and I think that's a model that maybe we've seen a lot from overseas in the United States, where sometimes you think the birth partners are very intrusive and very out of place because they're telling them what to do. It's like, can you just listen and respond a bit more rather than driving it? And then I've picked up an article here which was from the early 2000s. By an American coach who worked with young men to help them to support women, their partners in labour. And he's working in a context, this is Kaplan in 2004, and he's talking about young men who have been, who haven't experienced having a father with them, or those who have, and looking at the differences and looking at the research that. So one of his things in coaching was to prepare young fathers to be supportive, to make sure that their children didn't go through the negative experiences of abandonment. And part of that is the birth coaching. And looking at what he's written, it is a little bit prescriptive, but he's trying to prepare these young men to be supportive. So he's teaching these young men to be an advocate for the woman. He's saying, you know, you can be the person, you, almost as if you take charge in that room, make sure that the nurses are treating her properly. And if obviously this is an American context, but I just think it's quite... So actually it's trying to be supportive, but then you might end up with quite a dominant coaching role, which may be intrusive to what the woman's own wishes are.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's almost like a little bit of a circle. As media and as activists and as midwives and as birth partners, they're all wanting to empower that woman. We've used that word quite glibly, really, empowering that woman. But what you were saying earlier or at the beginning was about women who may already be that type of woman or not. She may be submissive. Yeah, yeah. And that's rooted, that's been shown through research, Carol Lambert's research for a PhD, absolutely identified that emancipated women will have outcomes that they are in control of.
Right.
And women that don't have that same start of their own within their own being perhaps end up more submissive.
Do you think that that goes right far back, is that the right terminology, to women not feeling that they have the ability to grow and birth a baby. Do you think it's as historical and as cut and dry as that?
Even before birth, I think, it's before women are even pregnant, it's what kind of woman you are, what kind of woman you see life as.
You believe in yourself.
And belief, self-belief is enormous.
I think that's even bigger. I think it's about the struggles that we have currently in society with things like identity and just physical. I mean, for women, I think body positivity, that's become a movement now, but it means something different to what I think it ought to mean in terms of, you know, this is what you were made for. This is one of the things that you were made to do, and you are able to do it. But I think young girls don't get that, because they're always, what they're assailed with in the media is women changing their bodies and women fixing their bodies to make them more aesthetically pleasing according to a particular standard. And childbirth is relegated to a thing that we try and get rid of, and we try and clean it up as soon as possible and get your body back.
Mm.
And we don't respect the woman's body as a powerful...
And I think tied in with that is, again, we come very much back to this risk culture.
Yes.
So right from the beginning of your pregnancy, you go in up to your first appointment in the pregnancy, the booking appointment, and the booking appointment is primarily a risk assessment exercise.
Yeah.
So we're looking at these women coming in, being pregnant, and going, what are all the ways in which this pregnancy could go wrong?
Mm.
What are all the problems that might come here? We don't go in going, you'll be fine. And again, it's almost like a surveillance culture. So we have to watch these women very carefully through their pregnancy to make sure they don't develop problems. And of course, that's going to put the idea in women's heads that their bodies don't work, because we're constantly telling them that they might not.
Yeah. So, I mean, do we have confidence as birth professionals that women can give birth? And that's something
that's a really
we've
big
looked
question.
At.
Yeah.
We've looked at, we've talked, the language of normality has been taken away. The RCM has deemed fit not to support a campaign for normal birth, because that's seen as pejorative.
Mm-hmm.
But where we need to fight for the physiology. You know, we have an anatomy and a physiology which means that we are equipped to give birth, and we're in denial about this, and we act as though women's bodies are intrinsically broken and need to be fixed or saved from the process of childbearing.
It comes back to that culture of childbirth.
Mm.
And if that culture is embedded in an organisation, then organisational ways of seeing things are different to individual women's way of seeing things.
Yeah.
And we've got to get back to that individualised care that continuity of care promises us.
Mm.
And that, I think, is absolutely the way forward.
And I think there's a lot of... Again, another thing that strikes me as being really positive in terms of the potential for improving women's confidence in their birth experience is actually, and it sounds counterintuitive, but social media. Because I know we think of it as an almighty evil that just continually tells women they're not good enough, but also it's a way women can connect with other women and have those conversations that we're not maybe having at home about birth and that experience. And there's a lot of places out there women can go and get that support. So places like the Positive Birth Movement, where people can meet online or they can meet in person, where they can have these positive, and that almost counteracts it. You can have this positive reinforcement of, well, I did it, I had this amazing birth experience and it looked like this, or I tried this, or I had a cesarean section and this is how we made it more what I wanted.
And absolutely, and I think that's a really good point, is that, you know, even if a birth is interventionalist, it can still be positive, and we need to bear that in mind, that actually it doesn't make it negative because there's been a medical intervention throughout that process. So I think that kind of concludes everything. Well, it doesn't conclude anything, because we've still got loads of questions to talk about.
We've exposed lots of discussion to go forward with.
But I think it's a really interesting discussion, and it always comes back to the experience of the woman, and it should rightly always come back to the experience of the woman. Sorry.
No, I've just thought of something which I think is really pertinent to this, and it's bringing it back to midwives, unfortunately, and I'd like to have ended on the woman part, but there's something that I've just thought of, which is going back to the fantastic Mary Cronk and one of the things that she used to say, which is that the role of the midwife is as a professional servant. And I remember I've mentioned this to midwives who have been absolutely horrified by that concept, going, I'm not anybody's servant. But that's what we have to keep in mind, is that we're there because of
to
the
serve
women.
Their needs.
To serve their needs.
Fundamentally. Yes. And it's how we can use that hierarchy to, I don't want to say empower the women, because that's, that's
be an
in its nature, non-empowering. But to put the women back in control, because women always should be, and they don't feel like they are, and they often don't feel like they are because they're not, realistically. And it's about how can we flip it so that we are professional servants. We are effectively employees of that woman because of the women. They are paying our wages. And therefore, they should be thinking of us as their employees, and therefore, what can we do for them? Not us going, how can the women fit into the model of care that we want?
That is a beautiful way to end this podcast, Frances.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Tea and Toast and Talking Birth. Like, rate and subscribe, and please listen to our next one next month.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.